This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Mafumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Ladies and gentlemen, Thursday Coast, once again, we welcome, as always, the founder of the largest online progressive community, DailyCoast.com, the founder of Civics with a Q, the polling firm, and the host of the ever-popular podcast, The Brief, downloaded wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, Marcos, happy Thursday. How are you on this State of the Union Thursday?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. All ready for the State of the Union. Look, you remember a year ago, everybody's talking about Biden's age now and then. Remember a year ago, Biden basically embarrassed the Republicans of the State of the Union, challenged them to respond to him and do something on the floor in real time. That has never happened before in the State of the Union. So wouldn't be bad to get, since everybody's talking about his age, wouldn't be bad to get that kind of performance tonight.
Yeah, a year ago, Kevin McCarthy met with this caucus and he asked them to show decorum at the State of the Union address and to show respect for the office of the presidency. And then they didn't, obviously. Kevin McCarthy, he did his best, but you got the crazy caucus. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene had that famous, wearing that Cruella de Vil fur shawl or jacket, whatever the hell she was. And she's screaming at Biden. And Biden turned the tables and he actually made utter fools of them, showed how quick and sharp his wit was. And if we could get a repeat performance of that, because the new current House Speaker Mike Johnson has actually just met with the caucus. It was reported yesterday that he again asked them for decorum and respect for the office of the presidency. But does anybody expect Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or Matt Gaetz or the rest of that crazy caucus to keep their mouth shut? They're utterly insufferable. They've broken the House. And so I don't see them listening. If Biden's people are smart, they'll bait them. It ain't hard. Just bait them and have the outburst. And if he could do a repeat performance of what he did last year, I think it would go a long way towards assuaging this idea that him being old is bad, as opposed to age equals wisdom and the ability to make things happen that people with less experience can't do, which is clearly not just reality, but it's hopefully what the Biden administration is going to be, or the campaign is going to be trying to do, trying to message as a counter to the he's too old attack lines. But the press is so fixated on he's old. So the target, I think, would be less voters, because not that many people actually watch the State of the Union address. I think the target would be the press that is really fixated, particularly New York Times, which has 10 stories a day on the breaking news that Joe Biden is old. Don't know if you knew that, Mark, but he's old. So they tell us every day about 10 times. And so a strong, sharp performance would really go a long way towards negating that narrative and shutting that crowd down. But if he has a moment, and Mark, I'm not saying Joe Biden is old, maybe he'll have a moment. I'm saying if I was on that stage, odds are about 80% that I would have a moment. I was up at the Nation stage last year. I had a moment where I lost my train of thought for about 5 seconds. And friendly audience, nobody cares if it's Joe Biden within the context of the narrative. Not a lot of room for error. So I'm actually hoping that he doesn't have a moment. And I'm also hoping that he keeps it shorter than it's been the norm to mitigate the chances of a moment like that happening. But I think it's a very high stakes, not because of the general electorate, but because of that media narrative. I think it will be important. And if he gets a few zingers in, if he baits the Republicans and he gets a few zingers that can then be thrown into a viral little video clip on TikTok and everything else, even better. But it's more important, I think, than the usual State of the Union address.
Yeah, and because people are so monitoring it, I don't know, this might be one that is more watched than others. But a couple things. The bad news is it's not going to be brief. I interviewed his director of the Office of Public Engagement, Stephen Benjamin, the former mayor of Columbia. He said because there's so much ground to cover, that States of the Union addresses, State of the Union addresses tend to be pretty lengthy. So I don't think we can count on this being short. But just to go back for a minute, when you started talking, you mentioned somebody named Kevin. Kevin who?
McCarthy.
I don't remember. Who was he? What was
he? He had his moment. I guess maybe he'll put a painting up in the House gallery of his
come and gone. Come and gone.
He was speaking for 8 months. He got something out of it. Oh, man.
Come and gone. Come and gone.
Sold to the devil, and for what? To get kicked to the curb.
All right, Super Tuesday. I'm sure you have found it interesting, too, how some of the media, even some of our friends, every primary day, they try to make a story. And we're on the board counting the numbers, but there's really no story there. We know what's going to happen. Nikki Haley's finally dropped out. Yeah. So what's your take on Super Tuesday? Is there a story, or is the story now we got to focus on November, and that's where everybody's attention should be?
Oh, there's a Super Tuesday story that informs the path forward. Obviously, the general election has just started. We need to realize, we need to now focus that, and in general, like I said, it is going to be a rematch. Nobody's too excited about that. I don't know if anybody's excited about that. And not only is it two less than inspiring candidates, perhaps, but also it's a reminder that the last time we went through this was in 2020, in the midst, the first year of the pandemic, right? It's just an icky time and a reminder of an icky moment in our lives. So it's not nobody's celebrating this, but it's just a reality. And we have to come to terms with that and realize that now we got to come together as a party. Luckily, we seem generally united as a party. And we need to start doing the hard work. And here's where the hard work part comes in. The rank and file voter, if you see the polls right now, some people are probably watching and freaking out because they show Donald Trump with a small lead. People are paying attention, right? If you ask them, there's polling, there's focus groups testing. So none of this is controversial or made up or anything, right? This is based on data. Voters don't make the connection between the elimination of Roe v. Wade and Donald Trump. They don't make that connection. It hasn't been made. We were able to make the connection between Republicans wanting to end abortion and Roe v. Wade. And that's why we won in 2022 and 2023. People don't blame Donald Trump. He's walking around bragging about it. Now, keep it. You're going to see that on your TV screens from here on out to the end of the world, right? Because all the campaign committees and every campaigns are going to be driving that message home that Donald Trump is bragging how he ended Roe v. Wade. Right now, people don't make that connection. They just don't. They're not paying attention, right? It's just, and it ended during the Biden administration. So why would they think it was Donald Trump unless you know how government works? And we know that most people don't know how government works, right? That's fine. Just means it's our responsibility as activists to educate people that Donald Trump is a reason that abortion is no longer a protected right in this country. So when you go down the list, whether it's the economy and inflation and it's abortion and democracy, people still, Donald Trump's been out of the picture for a while. They don't really internalize that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. There's a focus group that The Atlantic wrote about where Trump voters, they put a bunch of Trump supporters and they told them about Trump saying that a president has immunity, he could shoot his political opponent and he still has immunity. And these Trump voters were like, what? That's insane. That's crazy. How can anybody think that? They told them about the dictator comments. Like, they were like aghast, right? Like they couldn't believe this. They don't know. Now, thankfully, Trump has been blabbing away at all the rallies. He says he thinks we can put him on video. We can educate people. But that's what we have to do. We have to educate people. So when you look at the polls, just understand that we're even now where people don't really know much about who Donald Trump is, there's a weird nostalgia that happens when a president leaves office. So Trump is benefiting from that. But when people start hearing what Trump is saying today, not a lot of people are really into the president can murder his opponents and there's no recourse. Like, there's not a big constituency for that. So we have a great message. We have that Biden's been objectively a good president. And they don't have a lot to run on, right? So they're going to run on the border, bathroom bills, what else? Banning books. They don't really have anything popular to run on. And it's going to be an ugly election, whatever. But that's what we have to do. We have to educate people. And as people start tuning in and start hearing what Trump has been saying and what he continues to say, and even looking at Trump, because Trump, Mark, Super Tuesday, he only spoke for 15 minutes. He was out of it. It was too late. Like, he was cranky and he'd go to bed. He's too old. But he did not look good. And so as people see him and social media starts amplifying his gaffes and how he confuses Biden with Obama, and things are going to start changing. So don't freak out about the polls today. I was there. If you're going to freak out, just take a breather. August, that's when the polls and the conventions, that's when people will be fully checked in. That's when we need to actually pay attention to the polls. Right now, I look at the polls and it's not too bad. It tells me that Trump is at his best case scenario right now, and he's up maybe 1 or 2 points. And that's within the margin of turnout, which is the other place where we collectively come in, Mark, because we have, there's more of us than there are of them. That's why they're trying to subvert democracy everywhere. But that means if we do the get out the vote operation stuff, we need to knock on doors, walk precincts, talk to our friends and families and coworkers, and write postcards to swing state voters, all those things that are going to come online in the next few months. As long as we do that and we get our people to the polls, we're going to win. But it's a lot of work, right? This is not, we're going to win if we all sit back and let somebody else hopefully do the work, right? No, we all have to do this work. And we need to, because our democracy is on the line. So what does Super Tuesday tell us? One, yes, it's the start of the general election. It's start for us to really buckle down and start doing the things we need to do to win in November. But it also told us that Trump is very weak. He has been struggling in the early contests where voters were paying attention. The three early contests is where voters were most engaged, which is Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. Trump struggled to get 50%. He got 51 in Iowa, he got 52 in New Hampshire, and he got 59 in South Carolina. Can you imagine that Joe Biden had gotten anywhere near those numbers? People are trying to make a big deal that 9% chose undecided in undeclared in Nevada. They're trying to, or Michigan. They're trying to make that a big deal. Historic, no, actually it was, 16%, but it was historically within the norm. And in Super Tuesday, he averaged between 65 and 80%. So again, if Biden had gotten those kind of numbers, people would be screaming that he'd be done. He needs to do an LBJ, like you say, he needs to drop out. But Trump operates under different rules. But that's media narrative rules. Reality rules means that there is a significant, about, let's say, 25% of the Republican electorate that does not like Trump. And a significant number of those people have said in exit polls that they will not vote for Trump. A lot of them will come home because they're Republicans. So I wouldn't say 25% of Republicans are going to stay home. What I will say is that a significant portion, you only need a couple points, Mark. In a close election, all you need is a couple of these points. And Trump, instead of trying to unify his party, is going around talking about Bird Brain, Haley. Like, he's just basically punching all her supporters in the face and saying, you will not support me. And he has literally said, in old past elections, the losers unite with a candidate and they give them money. But I don't, anybody that supports Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley, I will not take their money. They can't donate to me. They're not part of us. And then on Monday, he was talking about how 98% of the party is MAGA. And he stumped out the Romneys and the Haleys. He's in the middle of a purge. Just the opposite. And again, all you need is 10% of Republicans say the hell with this. We can't allow this guy to win. Either they stay home or even a few vote for Biden. It dramatically changes the equation. So we are in uncharted territory. Trump is incredibly vulnerable. He has no money. And all the money he raises goes to pay his lawyer bills. And he's taken over the Republican Party so he can use their money to help pay for his lawyer bills. They are not in a good place. All we have to do is focus on our business, our voters, make sure they're educated, make sure they know what's happening with Trump and what he's been saying, and getting him out to the polls, and not even worry. They're in the middle of their civil war. Let them keep fighting the civil war all the way through November. We take care of our own business. We're going to win.
So a couple of things. Let's do a little math. You mentioned a term, margin of turnout, not margin of error.
Yeah,
and a lot of people understand that, but I don't want to take for granted everybody gets that, what we say. When we're talking about margin of turnout, then that's that, and it's a very small percentage. We don't need to turn out 10, 15% more of our base. We need to turn out what? 5 or less.
So the conventional wisdom in political science is that a good turnout operation, so a get out the vote operation, good turnout operation on election day. And now election day is obviously weeks, right? Because of mail ballots and whatnot. But a good turnout operation is worth 3 to 5 points. That's what that's worth. So it's long. So if the polls say Biden or Trump is up by 1 point, and let's say the poll is true, just we'll pretend. A turnout operation could then turn that into a Biden +2 to +4 victory. That's what a turnout operation is. Now, the Republicans have their own turnout operation. So that also adds, it's not like they're sitting around doing nothing. That's what the margin of turnout really is, that if it's close enough in the polls, in reality, the polls could be wrong. If it's close enough in reality, the team that brings out more voters is going to win. That's where that margin is. And I will tell you this right now, people are going to be freaking out about polls. Nothing will change in the 7 battlegrounds all the way through November. All of them will be within the margin of turnout. I just promise you, absent some cataclysmic revelation that I can't even imagine what that might be, we're going to be fighting for those 7 states all the way through Election Day. And whoever works hardest to turn out those voters is going to win.
Now, that's margin of turnout. Have you, or do you know of anyone else who's taken a close look at Nikki Haley's voters, and whether or not in certain states the number of people who voted for her might be the margin of victory for Joe Biden in those particular states?
Why, Mark? You didn't even know this, but I wrote about this yesterday. And I didn't go state by state. I just looked at one. I looked at North Carolina, right? North Carolina, 250,000 Republicans voted for Nikki Haley in North Carolina. She got 30%. No, 25%. It was 25%. That's 250,000 voters in North Carolina. In the exit polls, 86% of them said that they did not think that Donald Trump had the mental or physical ability to be president. 86% of them. So 250,000 voted for Haley. 86% of them don't think Trump can be president. Biden lost North Carolina by 75,000 votes in 2020. So that is well within the margin of Haley. We're going to talk about the margin of error, the margin of turnout, and the margin of Haley.
Wow.
And so I haven't looked at other states, but it's all the battleground states. It's going to be Michigan, these really close states, obviously, because she was getting 30-40% of the vote. And so a lot of them will come home, because that's what a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters said. They'd never vote for Hillary or they'd never vote for Biden. And then they do, because that's just what happens in the heat of the primary. You don't need a lot of them, though. Out of 250, basically, you need 30% of those to either stay home, or half of those 250, so 35,000 of them to flip their votes from Trump to Biden. And then suddenly you have a 50-50 race. So North Carolina is very much in play in general, but numbers like these. And Mark, I don't think the media narrative is picking up on this yet. I don't think they realize just how much Trump has hurt his party. They've done nothing but lose. Remember, since 2016, which he didn't even win. He didn't even win 2016. But since 2016, they've lost everything across the board. The only race they won was the Virginia governor's race in 2021, because Glenn Youngkin, the Republican, convinced people he did not like Trump and he kept Trump out of the state. And then last year, his party got their asses whooped because people are like, whoa, he lied to us. And they took it out on legislative Republicans. Democrats romped in Virginia last year. They are in real trouble. The only thing that could really, I think, help Trump at this point is that we get lazy and don't do the work we need to do to get our people out. And Mark, it's not just about Joe Biden. You don't want to get excited about Joe Biden. We can win the Senate race in Florida. We can win the Senate race in Texas. We got to hold the ground in Arizona. Arizona's going to be a huge upgrade. We got no more Kyrsten Sinema. We can celebrate that. No more Joe Manchin. That'll flip the Republican, but at least we don't even have to pretend to deal with Joe Manchin anymore. It's a tough map. it's incredibly doable. We can actually expand the map so we have a filibuster-proof majority, a majority of people willing to get rid of the filibuster. And Mark, we get rid of the filibuster. We have DC statehood. Puerto Rico gets to decide. I don't want to assume, let Puerto Ricans decide what they want to do, but that's going to be on the table. The John Lewis voter rights bill, the end of partisan gerrymandering, it dramatically changes the shape of our democracy. It protects it. It strengthens our democracy. That could happen. The House, I'm very confident we're going to take the House. Just things are not looking great for Republicans there. But we don't take anything for granted there, too. But we also have state legislatures. We have governor races. We have all these races. So even if you're like, Joe Biden, I don't care about Joe Biden, there, I promise you, there is a race somewhere that will get you excited, because there are some exciting people running for like Allred, Representative Allred, who's now the Democratic nominee for Senate in Texas, running against Ted Cruz. There's somebody out there you're going to get excited about. And you know what? If you help get people for that candidate, those people are likely going to vote for Joe Biden too. So even if you can have reverse coattails, that's cool too. You don't have to get excited about Joe Biden. Get excited about defending and protecting and expanding our democracy. That's what's at stake on the ballot. It's really about freedom. And Mark, I still can't believe Republicans have given up the freedom narrative of the party of burning and telling corporations who they can market to and telling schools what they can teach and telling people what pronouns they can use and what bathrooms that they can use and telling patients what they can and can't talk about with their doctors. It's amazing how they became the fascist party, like literally overnight. Like Trump came in, and I don't think we need to pretend that they were really about freedom before, but now they don't even pretend. They've given it up. So we have a lot of opportunities. Like we're in a good place. We just got to work our asses off.
You mentioned the purge a couple of times, and you also mentioned how people have yet to make the direct association with Donald Trump and the reversal of Roe. Just unfortunately, people don't make the association between the stimulus, or the stimmy as they call it, and Nancy Pelosi, because Donald Trump signed his name on the check. Some people, rappers, oh, Donald Trump gave us a check. No, he didn't. Rappers. That's why you should just stay rappers. But I would dare say that there's something else. People are obviously concerned about Gaza. The president is expected to make some strong statements close to what the vice president made Sunday with us in Selma. And before we went live, folks, Marcos and I were talking, and he and I are often in the same mind. Is what happened Sunday reminds you of what Biden did with marriage equality. He came out first, and then Obama came out. But people also are not immediately making the association as whatever criticism you have of Biden, what y'all think Trump's going to do. So he made a statement the other day. Trump says Israel has to, quote, again, these purge type words, these final solution type words. Trump says Israel has to, quote, yeah, Trump says Israel has to finish the problem in Gaza. So at some point, people, that's another association people need to make, because he's going to go buck wild, and Netanyahu's going to go even further with him. So just want folks to keep that in mind. These are associations now that we're out of the first couple of rounds of the playoffs, so to speak, and headed toward the finals. That's what people need to be aware of. Want to get your reaction to the Supreme Court. Do you find it also interesting that this court, even though we have Constitution, we went to school, Constitution Amendments, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, all these amendments, first, second, third, first, 1 through 10. But yet when it comes to issues like voting rights, issues like women's right to privacy, issues like insurrectionists, the court says Congress has to pass a law to enforce this amendment. But no one's ever said Congress needed to pass a law to enforce the Second Amendment. Have you noticed that?
I actually think it's a little more complicated than that. And legal federal jurisprudence is actually incredibly complicated. It's not a question about passing a law. It's about, part of it is some of the amendments that don't actually apply to the states. So the Constitution is very clear that elections are conducted by the states. And so there is a sort of supremacy situation, who has ultimate control over the electoral process. And that isn't necessarily fully, I think, hashed out. So, for example, the First Amendment originally did not apply to the states, because it says Congress shall make no law. So it's federal. And so the original First Amendment was just this federal government. The states could sit there and shut down newspapers, and the Constitution didn't speak to them until the Supreme Court said, wait, we mean all government. That's not what the Constitution says. So the Supreme Court actually has an incredible amount of latitude unless it is specifically written in the text. That's the problem. That's why we need a Supreme Court, one that will interpret things in a way. You have a Supreme Court now that says that the Second Amendment that says well-regulated militia suddenly says you can't regulate guns. When the amendment literally says regulate. So the Supreme Court, it's a problem. This is another place where if we get the majority, and I don't know if a 51-49 Democratic majority in the Senate is enough to expand the Supreme Court, but it really starts the ball rolling on that. And then that becomes a campaign issue in 2 years because that Supreme Court is illegitimate, out of control, it's radical. It ignores the text of the literal text. So if you're referring to Colorado and the insurrection decision, I agree. Like, we don't want states to just declare that somebody's ineligible to be on the ballot because Trump has not been convicted of insurrection. Now, if there's a conviction somewhere along the line, it would be great if Jack Smith, in his case against Donald Trump, throws in an insurrection superseding indictment for insurrection. If there's a conviction for insurrection, then it makes sense for states to be able to do that. Otherwise, it just opens up the door to Joe Biden is crooked and Burisma, and boom, suddenly he's off the ballot in Utah. That's dangerous. I don't think we want to see that. But yeah, the court in itself, just generally speaking, obviously, it's not a legitimate court. It does not reflect the will of America. This is a center-left nation, and now we have a radically right-wing Supreme Court that's holding back progress and making it more difficult for people to vote and really overturning even the will of Congress, right? This was, again, the small government conservatives are suddenly telling states that they can't have affirmative action programs. We need to expand the Supreme Court. I think that's the only way, absent a rash of deadly COVID going through the court. And I'd rather not. I'd rather we just expand the court. And there's nothing saying we can't do that in the Constitution. In fact, the Constitution says Congress can decide the size of the Supreme Court, expand it to 15, throw in a bunch of liberal judges, and there you go. And I would love to be in a position, Mark, where we can actually have that argument next year. We would be in a good place. That means that we won the White House. It means that we have a majority in the Senate that got rid of the filibuster. It means that we took the House. And then we could start putting pressure on those senators to expand the court. And that would be a great, fun thing to do next year. And I hope we're in a position to do that.
Yeah. We will absolve you, my child, of your words, absent a rash of COVID, deadly COVID going through the court.
That's the other option. I'd rather not. I'd rather we win everything and then we have an agreement from our caucus to expand the court.
All right. Yeah. And we should. And that is something that definitely must and should happen. Folks, we'll be watching the State of the Union. Will you? Some have said that there will be a more closely watching audience tonight because of the narrative on age to see what this president does. And yesterday, there was even a headline in the Wall Street Journal. They interviewed some voters who said they're not concerned about Biden's age. They must have also heard you somewhere, Marcos. They said, we're not concerned about Biden's age because we know Kamala is ready. And you've been one of the ones that have been saying, that's why we have a constitution. Although I'd hate for that to get to this Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. There are things about, there were some loopholes there, but we don't want them to say we need an act of Congress for a vice president to succeed a president to enforce this amendment. But we shall see. Folks, dailycoast.com, The Brief is a podcast, civicswithaq.com. We are, as Marcos has said, we are pretty much getting ready for the big dance. And all roads really lead to what we have to do to turn out and to do what's necessary and to pin Donald Trump's crimes, particularly Roe and others, directly to his mishandling of the economy, his mishandling of the COVID crisis, all of those things, and just the things he's even saying now. He wants to finish the problem in Gaza. We know what that means. Yeah, right.
Of course, you know what that means.
You know what that means. Yeah, he is. So we want to be aware and be mobilized and energized. Thanks as always, Marco.
And don't freak out about the polls. Realize that this is all part of the process, and we can educate voters, and things will look better by August. Let's do it.
Yeah. And maybe those need us to have a wake-up call as well. Maybe those polls also serve the purpose of creating a wake-up call for what it is we're trying to get done. So everybody keep that in mind as well.
Great.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.